This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome my colleagues, Chuck Holton and Michael Yon. Chuck and Michael are traveling now in the Mediterranean basin, traveling between borderlands. They've spent the last months in Panama. Panama is a borderland between South America and North America, the Central American borderland. But on the frontier, it is a passageway for the great migration now underway. In the United States, we're concerned about the Mexican border, but that's a subset of a subset of the great migration. Michael and Chuck have now traveled to the Mediterranean basin, first to Greece and Turkey, that borderland, people looking to get into Greece and the EU. And now they are in Morocco on the borderland with the EU and a exclave called Ceuta, which is Spain, EU, though it's on the North African shore. I begin with Michael because it's been some days and time before we've checked in with each other about what he's found of the migration traveling to North Africa. Michael, everyone can find Michael at locals.com/Michael Yon. You can find Chuck at locals.com/Chuck Holton. Chuck also makes video at Hot Zone. Michael, when we last spoke, and it was not on air, you had arrived in North Africa and had looked over the territory between the city of Tangier, well known in Morocco, and the city of Ceuta. What have you seen of the migrants, and have they been friendly, or are they being pursued by the Moroccan authorities? Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening. I'm actually looking out over the Mediterranean Sea right now. It's very calm. The waves are about 2 inches high. I see children splashing around out there. Sun's going down. In fact, are the migrants friendly? One of them is sitting right beside me from Algeria. His name is Oatman. Chuck and I have been running around with him all day today and a little bit yesterday. And I'm looking at Ceuta right now in front of me. It's about several miles away, straight line, or actually maybe a couple. And so this is the place where about a month ago there was a political tiff between Morocco and Spain. As you know, Ceuta is actually in North Africa. Ceuta is a Spanish city, so it's EU, and it's here in Africa. I'm looking at it, and I'm standing in Morocco. And so when many of the migrants come here from other parts of Africa, they will then go try to get into Ceuta. They'll either try to scale the walls, which you can see plenty of pictures online on the internet, very big wall, and we can see it here actually, or they've tried to swim. For instance, Otman, who's sitting here beside me from Algeria, he tried to swim it about a month ago, along with thousands of others, after the political tiff between Morocco and Spain. Spain had somebody that Morocco wanted to have sent back to Morocco, and Spain refused. And so Morocco answered by weaponizing migrants and just let them, you know, basically invade Ceuta, which is Spain. So as soon as they get into Ceuta here in Africa, which is Spain, this is an EU city, right? They are in the European Union. So it's quite interesting. Everywhere we go, we see weaponization of migrants. Chuck and I were just on the Greek-Turkish border. Same thing over there. And we've seen the same thing in Central America and other places.
Chuck, I want to call upon your excellent video, which I highly recommend to everyone, your walk through Boa Chiquito, a village, an Umbera village, indigenous people who live both in Colombia and Panama, in the triple canopy jungle called the Darien Gap. You walked us through the village one morning, and there was a poignant moment when you passed a young woman who just emerged from the bush, just come out of the jungle. She was clearly dehydrated and exhausted. You were kind to her as you passed. However, she had a mission, which was to keep going the many miles ahead of her and her unknown fate. I recall that moment in your video because it reminds me of what I've seen of your travels now in Greece and Bulgaria and now North Africa. The migrants have missions. And in your conversations with them or your observation of them, is it fair to say that they have more energy than normal human beings? Are they compelled by something that you've seen in them, Chuck? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Thanks for having me on. I would say, to answer your question in a very quick answer, I would say these people are motivated 99.99% of them by economic considerations. And I don't fault them for that. Everybody, you know, wants to have a better life than they have right now. They want to improve their station. But the way that they have figured out that they can do this is by moving to a place where they can make a better living, where they can make more money. And after studying this alongside Michael Yon here for several months, just doing it straight throughout Latin America, up to the U.S.-Mexican border, and now over in Europe, we see some real similarities in the way that these guys think, what their thoughts are. And their thoughts are just simply, I'm looking for a better life. I've got to get a better life. And yes, life is hard in Algeria, for example. Yes, life is hard in some places in Guatemala or Honduras or Haiti. And I wouldn't fault anyone for wanting to leave Haiti. I spent a lot of time in Haiti. It's a terrible place. It's a failed state. But where they give the lie to their asylum claim of I'm being persecuted and I have to go to a Western country, I have to go to America or to Europe in order to survive, is the fact that you could go – yes, there are bad neighborhoods in Guatemala, but there are also good neighborhoods in Guatemala. There are places that are not controlled by the drug gangs and the cartels that you could go to. And many of the people from Haiti that we've met over the last several months have they actually left Haiti 8 years ago. And they've in that video that you referenced, I did talk to one migrant who had just come from Brazil, and he had been in Brazil for 8 years. And so they've gone to another country. They've improved their economic station from Haiti. They've bettered their life. They're making a living. They're surviving, obviously, for some matter of years. And now they've decided that they want to go to the United States, or now in this case over here, they decided they want to go to the EU. And the question is why? Well, in the United States, it's an easy answer because Joe Biden is president and it's easier to get in now. But, it's a little more complicated here in Europe, but the motivations are the same. The motivations are economic purely. If somebody's handing out cookies, don't fault me for getting in line. If they're giving away cookies, I'm going to get in line for the cookies. But you kind of have to fault the people who are giving away other people's cookies when you talk about the tax dollars that it takes to support destitute migrants who are flooding in mass. And I think the real question you have to ask, and what it comes down to, is when does this stop? And the answer is it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't stop.
That's right. That's right. What we observe, that's why I observe it as the Great Migration. It's global. And you've seen that just now. And the movement from the Sahel just to North Africa is ongoing before they take the risk of going to the EU. Michael, I want to call upon your walk and talk with me at Alexandroupoli, the Greek town very close to the Turkish border. You sent me a photograph after you had left Alexandroupoli of young men who were clearly under custody in the village of Pharos. This is a Greek village very near the border, which is a big fence and a river, and guarded and patrolled by the Greek military, the Greek Border Patrol, and the local villagers. Who were those young men who were in custody, Michael? Have you learned?
Well, Chuck Holden and I were there together again, and according to the people that we spoke with, local villagers, those were Pakistanis. So we don't have anything more on that. We don't know if they're a Pakistani Taliban or if they've misidentified. We have no idea, but we know that the photo that you've seen, the villagers said they're Pakistanis.
And what we have found, I'm sorry what we have found is that they, we interviewed the commander of the border police in Alexandroupoli. And he's in charge of that whole region and the border patrol there. And what he tells us is about 80% of the people coming across that border illegally are identify as Turks. Now, I say it that way because what we've also found is that they may not in fact be Turks, because it's easy to buy a Turkish birth certificate inside Turkey. And so many of these people are actually Syrian. They're actually Afghans. They're actually from you know, other places in the Middle East. And the reason that they would identify as Turks and want to be seen as Turks, well, it's easy for them because they don't have any paperwork. They're not in any database. They've never been fingerprinted. So they can, if they, you come across the border without any paperwork, you could say you're from any place and there's no way to check.
And they're looking to, as you identify, Chuck, they're looking for a better life. It's global, which is why Chuck and Michael's travels from Central America, the New World, to the Mediterranean basin, both in the east of the Mediterranean in Greece, along the Turkish frontier, and to the west of the Mediterranean in Morocco, opposite Spain and the Straits of Gibraltar. This vast migration is restless, and there's no reason, as Michael and Chuck have taught me, there's no reason to believe that someone they meet on the roadside driving in Morocco won't be in the Darien Gap within the next 2 years. You look for the openings and you take it. And when we come back, what have Chuck and Michael discovered in their time in North Africa about travels to the EU and about how the Moroccan authorities regard these people emerging from the Sahel, the borderland of the Sahara Desert, or from Central Africa or from South Africa? How are they regarded in Morocco heading to the EU? This is CBS Eye on the World, watching the Great Migration. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.